Good morning. I'm Mike Duff, contributing editor at Homepage News and your host for the Inspiration Theater. In this session, the future of things, AI, sustainability at AP in the home, Lisa Holberg and Nate Vassilopoulos from Berwyn IP, Berwyn IP operation at the law firm Miller Johnson will provide a view on technology-driven changes in the marketplace. As technology and consumer trends evolve, smart, sustainable, and increasingly AI-designed homes are becoming more common. But it's important to ask, who owns an AI-generated design? How can businesses protect eco-friendly products that rely on shared or open-source data and materials? This morning, we will look at how emerging technologies from artificial intelligence to sustainable design and connected devices are reshaping the boundaries of intellectual property in the home and houseware sector.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Is it my first time this seminar, this conference? I can't wait to walk around and excited to see all of the things. So our presentation today, like Mike said, is about a lot. We're going to try to cover a lot of ground, so forgive us if that's entirely something that we can mention.
Yeah.
All right. So quickly, I'm Lisa Holberg. I've got 20-plus years of experience in intellectual property, specifically branding, trademarks, false advertising. That's where I practice predominantly. USPTO, WIPO, federal courts, some handy trade up to state courts. And my favorite home product is a hot deal breakfast. Makes my coffee delicious. With me today is my associate, A. She joined it for when IP as a summer associate in 2024, and they liked her so much, we never let her be. So she focuses predominantly this language. She loves patents. She's very into the more tech side of things and ideas. And together, we're gonna bridge that gap and explain both of all of that to you. Her favorite home product, there's something of being here in a company. So there's obviously a lot of forces shaping your industry, but this is not like the only thing yelling and all, but we really wanted to focus on the three that we thought were most highly, and that those were the artificial intelligence. We had the keynote, obviously, that was discussed there. AI helps you design your products. AI generates your app copy. AI powers your smart home device in it. So there's the U.S. company guidance, some USPTO guidance, and we're going to try to walk you through what all that means for you in this industry. We think another, and this one's not as new per se, it's given by a mouth and sustainability. So environmental buzzwords have been only since the OEM layer in the 80s, but nowadays, each year is even more than ever, are not just doing eco-friendly products, they want your own things. Well, so how can you market your products the way that meets that need? Because studies show, I called it the stat, according to PwC, consumers are willing to pay an average 9.7% more for sustainably produced goods. So that's not nothing. And then finally, sort of the old hat of maybe chief architecture behind all of this is intellectual property. Then, like, that's what we live in. So we're going to try to talk about how IP connects those two other forces. And we saw it. How are we going to explain all this stuff in a way that's accessible and tangible and kind of fun for the audience? So we created a super cool product called the Splashdown. And here's how it got. Using AI, you created an innovative countertop product that reclaims water used for windy or produce. It's made without any wet plastics, has a non-toxic coating to make it shine. Its filter pucks can be reused and recycled. It's Wi-Fi enabled and smart so that it will tell you when to water. What are your goals as the company producing this product, this wedge down? When you want to protect it with IP as you can, and layer your IP. Yeah. You want to advertise it as non-toxic, free from lead plastics. You want to save your pumps of recyclable, and you can love this to be sustainable as well. If you want to use this, the social media hashtag be plain sustainable. So here's how it works. Really, you don't need it. I just kind of thought it was fun. And I actually did use AIs and it'll be create that. But you can see kind of how this pretend product works. It's for products, rinse water, all paint, and you have to not use it right and breathe
questionable.
So with that, say you're going to talk about what's in your IP toolkit, how are we going to protect this thing? Done. So you can think of IP as a toolkit, as we mentioned, and essentially there are various types of IP that you can use to protect in different aspects of your invention or creation. So after the slide, I will go through the different types of IPs, but in short, you have your utility patents, which allow you to protect the functional aspect of your invention. Then you have your design patents that allow you to protect the ornamental design. For example, can go what the iPhone looks like, that's the ornamental design. And then you have your trade dress, which is the ornamental aspect, but the one that consumers recognize and buy. So for example, can go the McDonald's design. And then you have your copyright, which is the creative expression of your work. And then you also have the trade secrets, which are your formulas and secret processes that you use that generate revenue in your business. So the first one of these is the utility patent. And these utility patents can be filed when you have something that is new, that is useful and non-obvious. Is your
language
or when you have a novel process, a machine, or some sort of composition. And so to put this into perspective, or the invention that we mentioned, the splashdown, how could you use the utility admin to protect your splashdown invention? So you can use it to protect the water recapture mechanism, because this is a novel process of collecting and redirecting your produce grids water. You could also use it to protect the filtration and the puck system and the non-plastic metallic coating process, because all of these are novel processes. Another area that you can protect is by using the design patent. You can protect any part of the splashdown that is new, original, and ornamental. So in this context, you would protect the countertop unit's overall silhouette and form, the countertop's ornamental shape and surface design. And putting this into the perspective of AI assistant designing, even if your design is created with the help of AI, you can still patent it. You will just need to disclose one. You will need to disclose it with that patenting it. And you will also need to make sure that there was a significant human contribution to that process. And we'll go a little bit more into that in a bit. So just to remember, design patent is for the design, as the word suggests, and utility patent is for how the product works. So the trade secret is a little bit more simple because you don't actually have to register it. But this is any information that creates economic value and that creates value from being a secret. So, for example, think about the Coca-Cola recipe or formula. It's been a secret for over 100 years, and Coca-Cola makes money from keeping it a secret. And the fourth aspect is that you simply have to take measures to keep it a secret. So for the splashdown, you could use a trade secret to protect the non-toxic coating formula, the filtration pump manufacturing process, any AI training data and model configurations. So you get the point. It's essentially all processes and formulas that you want to stay a secret. And this usually works by just having NDAs or non-disclosure agreements with all your employees and contractors. So now imagine that fourth slash down, when you have gotten to the point where you are developing it. So if you want some forward promotion, you hire someone to create art for you. So this woman that you hired has been old stuff was fictional person. Created, is she real? She is not a fictional person. She is a very talented woman. She created limited edition crates showcasing your splashdown, And then she also uses AI to help her create a series of several additional prints. So now the question is, are these AI-assisted designs protectable with copyright? Because as you recall, on one of your slides, copyright comes in when trying to protect your creative expression. So here it's important to remember that copyright law protects only original works, the one original works of human authorship. So recently, courts have confirmed that if there is no human authorship, there is also no protection. So AI is obviously not a human. So if something is solely created and generated on AI, then the AI software is considered to be the author. Even if you're the one putting in the prompt, that is considered only to be like giving instructions to someone else. But if that someone else is not a human, then that's not considered human authorship. So in particular, the court highlighted that if the author, quote unquote, is an AI software, you cannot copyright that. However, you can use AI to assist the human as an author. So there we have kind of three categories. If you have an AI output and then you make it your own by putting some substantive edits onto it, that is protectable. A prompt, as I said, is not protectable. And using AI as a creative tool will be modified depending on if there was enough human operation on there. So before operation rules and, oh, the timer's not working, so I don't know how much time we have. Okay. So just quickly, so you guys get an idea of what is considered a sufficient creative input. You can use AI as a creative tool if you're using it sort of the way that someone would use Photoshop, but now you're just telling that AI software to make these edits. That's totally fine. Or if you're using AI as a video board for ideas and brainstorming, that is also fine. So as long as you're just using the AI to amplify your own creativity and not substituting your own that AI for your creativity, then it's okay. The problems, as we said, either you have a very detailed and creative that is not enough. And then if you, I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with using Midjourney or Hayesfield, any of those AI softwares. When you put an expressive input as a reference into these softwares, if that expressive input shows up in the output, then that output is also protectable because the expressive input was your own. So if you're someone who uses the software, that will make sense. And also, remembering to always add human modifications to AI generations is important because that can really save time. So AI in home and housewares, how does this apply in this case? So it is important that if you are using AI to assist you, you are documenting every human decision in your design process. So you kind of want to create a paper trail so they can know, for example, I used AI here, but then I had to select these photos, then I had to make these tweaks so that the copyright office can see that this was not just something generated with AI, but you did have to put in your expressive input. Then as for source and sustainable materials, open source is not great to use however you want, and you should always run IP clearances before you launch your products, very importantly. And then for smart device embedded AI, your firmware and training data can be protected, but you should watch out for third-party IP baked into the embedded AI. And then creative co-creation, as we mentioned, copyright only covers the human parts, so report every edit and collection you make. And then when you do register your copyright, there will be a little box where you can disclaim serving parts of your work. So in that area, you will want to make sure to mention which parts were created with AI, Because if you fail to do this, then the Copyright Office may just reject the full application. And the police cell will continue with a couple more avenues of protection.
Okay, yeah. So Megan mentioned earlier trademark. That's really where I live. That's still their store sign in there. So if people recognize, they see a word, they recognize the source of it, and that's a trademark. I've got some examples. Our trademark is splashed out, but can Devo write a company names and logos can be protected as trademarks? Domain names, match.com, Amazon.com. Those are bumps and be source identifiers. So trademarks, the way I explain it to my clients, they will tell you the who, Lowe's, not the what, hardware store. As I think you always think about. And in determining whether a trademark you might come up with for your awesome new product is protectable, there's something called the spectrum of strength. At the top of that, very gentle, we've got arbitrary and danceable marks. Kodak is danceable, kind of a made-up word. All those drug words, social media, Pogoni, and things like that. So they're made-up words that are danceable, very easy to protect right away. Arbitrary would be something like the word apple. In connection with selling apples, there's really no topography, what Apple can do with computers, don't need to protect that. One step down, still protectable, is suggestive. And I would say splash down is probably a that realm. They suggestive of the fact that it has water fall by the word splash. And splash down is reminiscent of NASA rockets and shaped by a rocket. Just below that, you've got descriptive marks. They can be protectable. They're not protectable right away. And what's a descriptive mark? Well, that's something like Holiday Inn. Way back when Holiday Inn started, what did it do? It described that you were not Holiday, staying at an inn. So that wouldn't have been protectable. But through years of continuous exclusive use and a lot of investment, that is now very protected and very well-known being this great mark. And at the very, very bottom is something that a lot of my clients like to come and give me something along these lines to have as a trademark. But you can never trademark a generic term. Remember I said Apple for computers, arbitrary, protectable. And Apple is a trademark for selling apples, not protectable. And your competitors would never be able to use that word in selling their own apples. That's not fair. So much like trade secrets, trademarks do not need to be registered to be protected. They are unlike patents in that sense. It is recommended there's some that come with it, but you don't have to. A specific kind of trademark that's really applicable in the home goods industry is trade dress. Originally, way back in the day, this was just how the product was dressed. So you see the Hawaiian old packaging, the labels. As we've moved forward into modern jurisprudence on this issue, it's expanded. Now we can actually protect the shape and look ideal of your product itself. I don't know if any of you have ever been up to Port County, Wisconsin. They're actually in Western Chair. The name of which I can't remember, but they have a trade dress registration for the look of a restaurant and live goats. I remember they're amazing speech panties if you not find yourself out there. So these are some examples. You've got my mom's splash down packaging, the Goldfish crackers, a registered trade dress, living side being surrounded, and then this lamb has been protected as trade dress here. So what do I think about the splashdown? Well, it's a product, it's not the packaging, and that makes a difference. So packaging can be protected as your claim grants right away. You do not have to prove second year in or acquire the state business like Holiday Inn. Yeah, now I told you about Holiday Inn. But if you're trying to protect the product itself, the case law said that can never be inherent use. That people are going to assume the way a product looks is based on how the product functions and what it does. So you're going to have to spend some time. If we wanted to protect the living feel and the splash hour, we have to wait 5 years. We have to show evidence that we spent the money of marketing it, that consumers recognize us, that there's a favorable mention in the press, that people being so hard and impressed by its big product. To then we perhaps get some registration. But if you are trying to protect your product looking feel as a trade dress, can't be functional, whether it's averaging one product. And that has a very specific meaning set forth by the Supreme Court in Traffic's Devices, the case in 2001. There's utilitarian functionality. What does that mean? The product looks the way it looks because its look is essential to the purpose of the article. It affects the cost of quality of the article. And yes, I'm getting to the weeds on that, but basically it looks that way to the NAST viewing test. Aesthetic test. This one is a little wishy-washier, and that's not litigated as much because of that, but not much certainty. But if it's a competitive necessity to use the Think Care of this design in the relevant market, then the design is.
Oh.
So let's take a look at how we're going to market Splashup. We already talked about the copyright thing with the astronaut who was some have prints. These are the kind of claims you want to make. And I want to walk through, are these acceptable? We have some sort of risk and enforcement that you talk about reusable, recyclable, free of wet plastics, innovative, non-toxic finish, and if you use the hashtag reclaim.
Adult.
So we're not here to answer that question. Tell me whether that FTC agree or that is, right? The FTC agree, guys, the Mid-Arabic is 1992. They are advisor guidance and not formal regulation. But violations of them can trigger FTC enforcement action against you, as well as courts and states' attorney generals treat them as the standard of care. And many states, in fact, have what are called little FTC acts. So even though it's not really actionable in and of itself, doing something in Michigan that violates that will be a problem for you. The FTC green guys have something called the substantiation rule. And what that means is you have to have a reasonable basis for any objective claim at the time of the thing, and before you put it out to the public. So, and we're talking about environmental claims specifically, your reasonable basis often requires competent and reliable scientific evidence. What are gap claims? Why have to worry about this? They're pretty much anything, right, that you're communicating to your consumer. So, the guides applying environmental claims and label advertising, promotional materials, hashtags, symbols, anything that you're putting out could be considered an ad claim. Even if it's just a picture of a lush green field, it could be communicating something to be primal friendly, but that could be true. The key terms that they cover, there's a bunch of them that are defined: recyclability, creatability. You can see them on for yourself there. If you ever have a interest in looking, they are actually quite helpful because they do have these examples. These are the last updated in 2005. In 20, they have every 10 years they're meant to be created. That. So that happened, that kickoff started in December of 2022. That's the comment period. I want to say there were over 1,500 comments submitted as what should we do? Should we define organic? Should we define sustainability? How are we going to change these? Because spice keeps changing and the buzzwords that marketers want to use keep changing. But there's still no new guidance that, so how remains to be seen. We're left in a vacuum. There's a patchwork on state laws, and even the city of Philadelphia has put forward a law to address some of this green marketing, sustainable marketing. The biggest one I want to mention to you guys is California SB 343. It's called the Truth Recycling Labels Act. It talks about that little symbol. I shouldn't be a bigger, but it's like the Mobius strip of recycled heroes. So if you have an under product, but even if you got something that's behind it's being recycled, the material in your product has to be widely collected and sorted for recycling across California and not be designed in a way that prevents it from being recycled. That is nice plastics will do that. This has been kind of a slow burn. But as of any product manufactured after October 4th, 2026, it has to be like this. So if you're going to sell it to California, and you probably are, you're going to have to comply with the SB to make all these green. New York has a similar one that has been proposed, but it's still pending as of today. And like I said, Philadelphia actually put into place its own recyclability claims in municipal code. And then there's currently a lawsuit. They sued FC Johnson and Bimbo Bakeries for labeling plastic bags as recyclable. And those plastic bags actually are not collected by Philadelphia's recycling program. So will Congress step in, or will the FTC guys worth the time to set? Because there are these sustainable, recyclable claims park everywhere. There's a lot of folks want to make it. Like I said, there's a premium to be able to market your products that way. In February of 2026, a bipartisan bill was introduced by New York Republican Congressman Nick Langmuir. It's called the RNVAB. It's specifically in the bill requests that FTC update their guides to harmonize recycling and recycled content at the engineering and labeling refinery nationwide. And the recognition there, it's really hard to sell products with something that would be completely legal in Texas, if they'll manage it, hot water, and you don't want to be, you know, marketing and selling different products on a state-by-state basis. So that one has just been recently introduced. I think sadly, it came. There's a similar one that was introduced at the end of 2025 called the PAFT Act. That one was introduced by Representative Randy Weber in Texas. And it's also in the early stages. I don't think that one is in a committee yet. It would amend the FTC Act to include certain requirements for recyclable, compostable, and other claims. So it did a high level repairing to the RMA targets what's actually in the province, whether it's recyclable, whereas the PAFT Act targets what you can do with the product and how many still can issue waste to deal with it. But interestingly, they both reflect the legislation, the pressure right now for the FTC to modify those green guides. So here's the fun part. This is the ad that you want to run. You want to say, our products are reusable and recyclable. But hidden facts, only three metro areas, Austin, Chicago, and Seattle, actually accept your new puck material for recycling. In most places where the product is sold, curbside programs do not take it, so you have to mail it in. So why is that broadly? It's an unqualified recyclable hemp market, so it suggests broad recycling availability. And the green guys say that unqualified recyclable claims are appropriate only when recycling facilities are available to vast majority of consumers. So they have to be available to 60%. The teaching takeaway here, if you want to make this claim, you need to have a qualifier. Those are PUCs recyclable through mail-in programs or in participating cities, which marketing folks don't like and then make it less pretty, but we got to be honest about it. Claim number two, the example that you want to give is you want to say free of black plastics. But in fact, even though it is in fact free of black plastics, they're really hard for recycling facilities to sort, it still includes a very dark internal insert or ring that's similarly for common sorting systems to attack. And therefore, it's likely to be rejected from recycling series, creating the same end of life issue that black plastic combines. So why is that a problem? It is free of black plastic, can I be honest to say it? Well, the green guys warn that a free of leaf can still be deceptive and problematic if the product contains something that can show the same end result, even if they'll pass that reading through it. So the teaching takeaway is here. The same problem remains. Maybe does not make this claim. And if you do, you have to, again, some sort of follow-up on here. Claim example number three. This was my innovative non-toxic finish, shine like starters. In fact, though, even like in that study showing that the finish you put to make your product shine is not as toxic for the intended use case, watering plants and washing things, you actually not get evaluated whether this reclaimed water is safe to drink. You don't know. That is a problem because the green guys say that when non-toxic claims are made, that conveys to consumers the product is safe for humans and the effectmen. And because you could always substantiate white bones, you can't make the claim. So you should avoid broad non-toxic headlines like that and say exactly what you're going to write. You substantiated plant use you have in for drinking. Now, interestingly, I don't know if you can see, but it says not the green. And then it's, again, something that some of my clients, they say, well, that is a slinger. But it's like way down buried and nobody can see it. So that's probably not going to be considered sufficient to biodegradation. And finally, last thing, I know we'll talk a lot. Reclaim is sustainable. You want to use that cash tank without being a broad sustainability claim. And you hear it. It gets kind of risky. So unlike the green flags we've been talking about, sustainability really builds it more, right? It's not just about your product being recyclable. When consumers hear sustainable, they think you kept sustainable daily prep, that you're sourcing things globally and properly, that you're a good steward of the fifth. And so this kind of broad positive environmental thing, they're difficult to substantiate, and that puts you in the crosshairs of that FTC or state's attorney general. So if you're going to make a claim like this, you need to qualify and specify. Use it with additional information like reclaims up to X gallons per week, reducing wastewater by Y percent. I think that's a smart rating of the list, but it might be a state prevent to just go with a different cash bet. So quickly, there's a green spectrum here. We've got greenwashing, which some of you may have heard of. This is making false or highly exaggerated claims that these are most often litigated. So if you make this kind of broad claim, 100% natural, zero waste, and you don't have enough factual basis, that's a really good way to get caught by the FTC, a state attorney general, for a case worth that section. Green legacy, that is repeatedly shifting your vote goes. So if you're continuously replacing your ESG, your environmental, social, governance standards, and you're never actually meeting your goals and the whole goals are just quietly melting away while you're setting these new goals, you're going to be in trouble for greenwashing. Green witching, this is one that's come up recently in litigation too. Have a really sincere belief that you're going to be able to meet this sustainability goal. You've had the chance to, and you hope you can. But if you don't have a realistic plan to achieve that goal, that's greenwashing, and that's not sustainable, and you can get into trouble. And then finally, the greenwashing is deliberately silencing yourself about anything you've done to be sustainable. I was trying to say, I'm afraid I'm going to get in trouble. Well, that's not bait. It's not illegal, but it does limit your market credibility, and it's not good for investors. So safe practices for green claims, substantiate before you publish. Be specific but general. For recyclability claims, you have to have, at least currently before things change, actual access by 60% of the population based on the MTC 60% goals. Keep, like Faye was saying with AI, keep a substantiation file. You're trying to make claims. You know, what does your lawyer say about it? What does your scientist say about it? What proof do you have that this is actually true? Even paper peaked. And finally, with the green wishing, have a clear road. It's okay to be aspirational. You want to be, you know, completely recyclable within 10 years, but have a goal to actually get there. And then it comes to get to pay here for a moment.
Right.
So putting everything on the, bringing everything that Lisa said to the, I guess, real world cases, there have been a handful of recent cases that kind of shed light on what the courts think about what types of green claims are acceptable and what are, you know, overstating your sustainability. So one is, and this is more so important for your marketing stance. So it is very important that you do not make future pledges that are non-backed by real actionable steps we were taking. So for example, making a future pledge of net zero by 2040, but without having made concrete measurable steps was not enough for the court, and the product has been discontinued. Making vague claims that cut consumers from misconstrued. For example, saying carbon neutral, that's a type of disclosure that consumers could misunderstand. So the court said that you must explain your methodology more prominently. Then there is a more recent case with Keurig, where Keurig claimed that their cake cups are recyclable. However, that is not, while the plastic that they use is technically recyclable, the reality is that most areas do not actually have a facility for being able to recycle the pods, and also there's contamination because of powder package, and you have to separate the coffee throughout the grinds, so it just makes it not realistic. So the case is still ongoing, but the court so far is seems like they're saying that if you're claiming that something is recyclable, it actually needs to be in practice recyclable, not just theoretically. Also, your operations need to match your marketing. So if you're making green claims, that thing has to be consistent throughout your entire life cycle of your production process. And then the good news is that comparative language is actually okay. So the courts seem more favorable towards claims such as more sustainable than our prior version, as opposed to just saying sustainable clothing. And this was from an H&M case where the court dismissed the case against H&M because they deemed that, you know, H&M's current versions were more sustainable than the previous version. They've been knocked by a lot. And there haven't really been cases yet determining whether, let me rephrase this,
if there is a, and everyone kind of knows that AI is not the most sustainable thing to have in your workflow. However, there haven't been any cases that we are aware of so far where the court determined whether it is greenwashing to say that you are a green company if there has been AI in any part of your workflow. So I would say, and maybe Lisa has a different perspective on this, but that it would be good right now, say if you're using AI in your design process in the very beginning stage, when you are marketing your product, try to make specific green claims towards the things that you know for sure were green about your life cycle. So don't say something that's to be construed as you being green in the whole process. Because then if it came out that AI was used in some process, some part of your process, that could be seen as making dishonest. But there's sadly not enough law right now on this to have a very definite advice on this. The law is just building. I'll turn it over to Lisa again.
Thanks, dear. Yeah, there was something that I just read the other day where either a regulator, or I forget the course, but the point is, hey, we can use AI to actually track our company's sustainability and how well we're doing. Well, that's great. But by using AI so much, you are using the equivalents of energy that like all of Japan would use in a year just to prove how sustainable you are. So are you really being sustainable and tracking it makes you be not sustainable? So that'll be a piece area to watch how the use of AI can undercut your sustainability claim. So the future is now. These things are happening. These things are real. What are some concrete takeaways that Dean gave you from our session? Number one, document human creativity in every AI workflow. Dated records of your prompts, edits that you make, selections and decisions. Your paper trail is your copyright claim under the 2025 rules that we discussed. Number two, choose and register the right IP for the product. Do you want to design something? If you want to get protection for the way your product looks right out of the gate, that you're not going to be able to regret. So design that might be the way to go. Is there something innovative and novel about any new procedures, your processes, or work? And function of what your product does, look into getting the utility done. Do you instead just want to keep it a secret, like the famous formula for cult? You're not going to have to that becomes public, but you're just going to keep it to yourself, indefinitely protect it, maybe create secrets to path for you. And again, registration is not always required for each form of IP, but especially with copyrights, registration entitles you to statutory damages, which are the United. Number three, map your jurisdiction. Like I said, something that could be legal in Texas is not going to be legal currently in California. And until the federal government enacts a law that unifies everything, you're going to be dealing with this patchwork. And one thing I didn't even mention, some companies sell overseas, right? EU is traditionally a little bit stricter on either AI and Korean, because territory laws, we are here. So map your jurisdictions, you know who you're selling to, where you're selling, to make sure that you can comply. Number four, build a claims approval process. I didn't ask at the start how many of you were attorneys versus not, but if you're an attorney and if you're in-house, you know, set up that flow so that your business people come to you and all can burn me. If you are not a lawyer, but on the 5 to 9 of the marketing side, involve your lawyer early. The longer you wait, the more potential the problem tends to grow. Then you have to make last-minute changes that nobody's happy about. Why are you green claiming now? Plan words like sustainable, eco-friendly, green, and then just look through the CFR, but through the new guidance, the directional link you're doing okay. And just know, because people are willing to GFP in ways, you got to be careful with hiding to it, because enforcement bodies are going to be really looking out. And when you say sustainable, your consumers wanting to be sustainable. There's a bunch of cases about various food products, like sustainably sourced salmon, and then people find out, actually, it really wasn't sustainably sourced, and you can get hit with a big fine or a big busting. Damn, use a word rather. And then finally, I know this is no fun, but set a 90-day review calendar. This is such an emerging area of law. Copyright office and AI update, FTC green guides, that might change. New state greenwashing laws are out of the time. The USPTO has been kind of backing more that already on its AI disclosure rules. The space is moving fast. What you know today might not be the same as 10 days from now. So check-in, and that current downtown with Uber 4, where we want to use a bill pamphlet process. So that is it. There's us in the future, past future. And I really enjoyed presenting to you guys. I think that we've got, if you have questions, we're happy to answer them, or at least try to get to them.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the audience?
Let me start.
I really like that. And we have the future play.
Okay.
It's a topic that can be bewildering. Yes, I'm getting involved in this process, or I'm interested in these processes. What would you recommend as first steps? In other words, before you get into the nitty-gritty, what do you have to educate yourself on? What should you be doing at the beginning before you start the process?
So, are you saying if you're about to, like, events and product, you're thinking about, you know, within you?
I just came up with a home car wash for dogs.
Love it.
And I don't think anybody else has this, and maybe similar projects, but I think I'm pretty much done with it. I have graphics. I have something I want to protect, but I'm kind of clueless about what I'm doing. Who should I go to see? What should I start with? And how do I get onto this track of being able to get into the process?
Yeah, so if you are in a company and you found that as part of your work, immediately visit your legal, and then they can walk you through any steps. You are just, I'm starting your own business as an entrepreneur, and we definitely help folks like this a lot at our firm. You know, reach out to a lawyer or somebody that you trust. Honestly, I think you can start making legal research of your own. Google patents is a good place to start. You can just plug in the words in-home gun launch and see if something comes up. You can similarly go to the USPTO website. I think don't mind the law. You can go to the USPTO website, and there are ways to search if anyone has the file with trade dress on that kind of product or a trademark for that. You can search the copyright office and things that might guide that. So if you want to start with the law, make sure you're not the position on it. My sister in law might have this spray bottle thing that she was like convinced was going to make her a millionaire. I looked at it for her, and somebody had already had a patent. So you kind of want to start. I think the best way to do it is to start on your home and then maybe bring the materials to the funding to say, where should we start with this protection? And oftentimes, the first questions and me, you know, do you want to apply your patent? Can you do a patent? Does somebody else have it? Or do you want to keep it secret and maybe get a treat secret? And even if they're like, you know what, you can't get a patent on it, it's just not going to work. Well, you can still get a product. And in that case, I think your branding becomes a lot more important and how it's going to differentiate the market, not with a patented whatever, but with a slashing campaign and a risky subventry. And again, if you're going to go down the route, this is sustainable because of what I believe that it's free and valid, then do it with the green dust. So hopefully that helps.
Any questions?
I've pulling pieces in some time.
I have a question about documenting human creativity.
Yes.
Have you seen good examples of best and organizations really enforcing it in organizations? But today, if people find coding and they're really, really quickly creating and iterating, and at the end, they believe they have something, maybe not to best, but in me, they've innovated and created value for the organization, but would have tasked
Rebel Muster. Yes, because he got it great, and then I got it, and I didn't say things about my mind level. Because the Copyright Office came up with their report on AI pretty recently. So there actually haven't been a lot of cases where the Copyright Office or the courts have affirmatively stated, okay, this is done well, so we can copyright it. Has there more so big cases where people did it wrong, and the Copyright Office or the courts said, if this had been done X, Y, Z way, we may have considered it copyrightable. So the reason why it's important to document the process, and I know, as you said, it's for the fast days of Ireland, it's kind of chaotic how to keep records of every single phase of the board workflow. But the reason is that when you're
when you're registering your copyright, there will be a spot that says, which part of this are you basically claiming the copyright for? And then is there any portion of this that you disclaim? So you would have to disclaim any portion that is non-copyrightable. And as we mentioned, AI-generated things are not copyrightable. So that, if you use AI as part of your workflow, that won't make the whole invention non-copyrightable. It just means that you will have to let the copyright office know this segment of my invention is being disclaimed. I know it doesn't make much sense. It's a lot of, I don't know if that really makes sense. That's just the way they want it. They want to disclaim AI things. So it's important for you to be able to show them, hey, look, these were the things that I created. These were the things that the AI created. Just so they know that you're not linking up and the AI just created everything.
And so I think to build on that, but it doesn't be very good. I think if you're in a situation where they're going to come to me, it's pretty quickly having a meeting with the creatives. Thank you, so we're going to do it. Why you sit down to do this? I know it before, and no one likes forms. And they go, well, we live on forms. But, you know, we made that document, the date. Here's what I did. Here's what I must be getting the data split head. So at least if nothing else, it's going to jog in their memory that they sit down with somebody right. And does that form exist yet? I see one. So, you know, build out whatever works for your group, for your folks.
I was saying that, sorry, and you were about to say something, but what I have read from the copyright office is that, so if you're generating, say, a design, some ideas using an AI software, and then you're building onto those, you want to, you can even just take a screenshot of what AI generated for you. It doesn't have to be official. And then you could do their own mappings. You can take portions of that for your office design. But the copyright office will just want to see what was the raw output that the AI software gave you, so they can make sure that it's not just identical to what you ended up copywriting. So they can do a screenshot. That's fine.
That's fair. It does say they need some vetting ahead of time when we know people are going to be working on or to be the one copyright or have someone who might be reading about that method of GNS.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think I can spin.
At least one quickie thing, because I've just understood this. There seems to be a lot of validity right now with Brie. And I think you recommended an ID tag review process.
Indeed.
It should just be there. Is this, you know, hey, before you say Brie anything, set up process so they can review this so you're not getting in trouble 18 months.
Yes, I think that goes into the Milvan approval process. So you should sit down anytime you, you know, take the screenshots, make the process. I love to sit down with my clients, marketing department, and say to them, here's how we're going to do it going forward. I'm not trying to cycle your creativity. That's, you know, lawyers get that reputation, but I just want to make sure you will do it steps and steps. And so, yeah, oh, look, here's this plan. They're trying to stay sustainable. They're trying to stay green. And then your attorney said, let me check and see where we're at. Did the FGC update their guy? So, night and day, maybe that's an aspirational. Maybe it needs to go on the path. That's a fair point.
Anyone else? Well, please thank our speakers.